This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing practical magic. Bah-bah. Not eccentric magic, not extravagant magic, just practical magic. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss?
Yeah. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of October, we do one spooktacular Halloweeny movie, and today we are doing Practical Magic. I am here with my belt-tacular co-host, Miss Tamara Cosio.
I am here with the abra to my cadabra. Hocus to my pocus. Sally to my Jillian. Corinne Edding.
Woo! Oh my goodness. I had a day today. How things go for you?
You don't even want to know. It started with a cockroach infestation. Okay, not an infestation, but we have never had cockroaches in this apartment very bad. Until one night at 1 o'clock in the morning when I flipped on the light switch and I swear to God there was a motherfucking cockroach party in my kitchen sink. So.
Chica, chica, chica. You put the lime in the coconut and mix it all around. The little cockroaches got their little tequila mixers.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Nya, 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 nya. Yes, it was a cucaracha party. It was not cool. I texted the maintenance line, told them they needed to spray. That was 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
And they finally answered and came to spray this morning, but said they were going to be here at 11. Actually showed up at 10:30.
Great.
Came in and started spraying while I was walking Miss Melody. And I walked in on the guy spraying in my room and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm spraying for bugs. And I'm like, you're not supposed to be here till 11. He's like, I don't know. They just told me to do it. And I'm like, my roommate's asleep in the next room.
Oh my gosh.
There's somebody here? And I'm like, yes. He goes, well, I knocked. And I'm like, yeah, he's a heavy sleeper. Knocked on my roommate's door. David, what? Give me a second. Open the door. He's like, what? What's going on? I'm like, they're here spraying. They're not supposed to be here till 11. I know, David, but they're here.
They're here.
So we almost died.
Great.
That was really fun because I was like trying to get all my stuff to go to work. And I'm like, is it okay that we're in here since you already started spraying? He's like, yeah, just don't be in there for a long time. And I'm like,
I'm
going to die.
Tam, almost dying would have really interfered with this podcast. I'm just going to let you know that. So I appreciate it that you got it together to leave.
I'm so glad you have your priorities in order. So considerate of you to think of this podcast first.
You know, I care. I care about our gentle listeners.
Not the forehead skin peeling off of my face. No, that doesn't concern you because it's a podcast. Nobody sees us. It's not video
exactly.
Or anything. Great. Love you too, Corinne. How was your day?
Oh my gosh. So last year I went on the Corinne's Not Going to Die tour because my sister died last June and I wanted my parents, mainly my mom, to feel like I wasn't going to be dying imminently. So because of that.
You know, Corinne, if you died, it would really interfere with this podcast. So.
I know, right? It'd be really inconvenient.
So, yeah, don't do that. Or at least, if you can give me, a couple of weeks' notice so I can, eke in a new host and kind of, fold them in like some cheese.
Oh, you already tried to replace me. This is great. Thanks. Thanks a lot. So.
I don't want to, but if you're dead, what are my choices?
What am I supposed to do? Yeah. The show must go on.
Unless you have a heater and some strong smelling salts, you're assed out.
So last year, baby got her first mammogram. That was me. And I was like, yes, never doing that again. It was horrible. And then they found something. I got biopsied. Everything is okay, but they wanted to keep their eye on it. So they scheduled me for a follow-up sonogram. I got it today. That all would have been good, except for after the person saw my sonogram results, they're like, she needs a mammogram. So, surprise, I get another mammogram. Yay. Mm. And then, after I got the mammogram, the mammographer was talking with the doctor, via messenger, and the doctor was like, has Corinne been to the surgery center? And I'm like, surgery center? And I'm like, no, why would I be at the have gone to the surgery center? And she's like, well, she should go to the surgery center. And I'm like, why am I going to the surgery center? And she was like, well, after your biopsy results, which were from last year, but after your biopsy results, and I don't know if a ball got dropped or if just like upon looking at things later, they were like, oh, you know what? Whatever they saw in my boob should come out. So like, I'm fine. Nothing bad is happening. But apparently they want me to have a consult so that I can possibly get like a lump removed. And so like... The nice thing about Kaiser...
So they basically, they want you to get a procedure, but they forgot to tell you that they want you to get a procedure.
I don't know, because I haven't really super looked into it, but I will tell you that they decided that definitely at this appointment. And so it was all just very a lot and unexpected, because I was not prepared to get a mammogram. I was not, you know, I was just getting a sonogram, which is a totally different, less squeezy kind of deal. So that was fun. Ended up crying. It was great. Yeah. So after I did that, when I meant to get my second polio vaccine, instead I went home and I got under blankets and I took a nap.
Sounds like a good end to a bad day.
Yeah. So I was just like, it was just an emotional day. I am fine. I am healthy. Just need to get some extra baggage removed, but it's nothing at this point, so it's fine. But the nice thing about Kaiser, because like I listened to an episode of By the Book where Kristen, she got a mammogram, they saw some like irregularities and they were like, you need to get a sonogram, you need to go back to get this, but you need your doctor to refer you. And it took her over 3 weeks of calling to get an appointment. And yeah. And for the doctor to like go over the results with her. And then the doctor was like totally blasé about the entire thing. So like for me, got the sonogram. They're like, oh, she needs a mammogram stat. I was waiting for a mammogram in a special room with like little water features 20 minutes later and getting my boob squeezed. So they just channel you on through if they feel like you have something that needs a priority, which, you know, is appreciated. So thanks, Kaiser.
Oh, yeah. I don't feel the same way when I try to get my lady doctor appointment. They're like, we can get you in December. I'm like, it's August. Yeah, so did you want that December one? No! What is wrong with you? If there's nothing wrong with you, they're just going to try to drag it out till something is wrong with you?
You're like, what if I whisper sweet nothings into your ear? What if I call you Beltacular? Would that move me up in the rankings?
No, it's almost comical because Corinne was trying to navigate me how to get a appointment sooner on the Kaiser app. And it winds up that the SoCal version of that app is really a lot shittier than the NorCal version.
Yes.
Because in her version, you have options and who you want to see and what kind of visitor you're looking for. And mine are, do you want to see a doctor or go to a class? See a doctor. Do you want to see your primary physician? No. Do you want a video appointment? No. Do you want a video appointment? No.
No.
How about a video appointment? No. Okay. Do you want somebody to call you for a phone appointment? That's not getting any better. It's actually getting worse. Those are your choices. Pick one. I don't think you can get a gynecology appointment via the phone, but I don't know if technology might have like changed. Things might have moved around a little bit.
They're like, we sent you a speculum and a light. So just...
So you're going to position the phone thusly, and then the doctor's going to be on one end. She's going to direct you on how to give yourself an exam, and it'll navigate you through the different steps you have to go through. Sounds fun.
Yes. Good times. We know how to have a lady good time. Gynecologist for the win.
Mm-hmm.
A few months later.
At least I found a good taco place, so that was a pro.
Ooh.
Pro on the day.
Tell me about this luscious taco that met your lips and went down your
throat. Don't make me say the word again, because I can't roll my R's to save my life. Birria.
Miss Tamara had a birria taco. Tacos.
Oh, no. She had a birria taco, a queso taco, and a vampiro.
Oh, did it suck your blood? That concerns me.
No, I don't know why they call it that. My friend told me, but I forgot. And then I had some consomme, which was delicious.
Ooh. What's consommé?
I'm not even entirely sure. That's what they call it. But it basically tastes like pozole juice, but it's just the juice. Maybe a little greasier, but not in a bad way. And then it's got like some shredded meat on the bottom with onions and cilantro on top.
That sounds tasty.
And they say you take your taco, your crispy taco, and you dip it in the consommé and then you eat it.
That sounds way better than how my hands smell, which is like cat food. So, you know.
I got birria hands.
I envy your birria hands. I'm taking care of 3 cats and a dog right now. And last night they all hated me and left me alone. And I felt very like I was the loner girl that was being rejected. That was fun. And so I tried to win the cats' hearts back by giving them this treat, which is this like, quote, broth. But it's this packet of something and you're supposed to shake it up. I didn't realize you needed to shake it up. And then you divide it between the cats and it's greasy and it's got little bits of meats in it. And man, I got that shit all over my hands. So went to my breast sonogram appointment smelling like cat food.
At least it wasn't your lady doctor appointment, just saying.
True, true. And I was effective in winning back their affections. So at least there was that as well.
Pit to my peak, trying to eat tacos while all my utensils and paper towels are wrapped in plastic bags due to the spraying of the bugs. I have like 45-gallon garbage bags full of my utensils and plates in the living room. And why? Why?
It's like a little treasure hunt. How fun.
No, not fun. It is like a treasure hunt, but it's just not fun. Congratulations, Tamara. You win a spoon. You don't have to eat your consommé with your fingers. Not fun.
Hey, Miss Tamara, do you have a synopsis for us?
I sure do.
Ooh.
Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman in this movie were just goddamn gorgeous, both of them.
Ugh.
Like, ugh, blew me away.
This movie was such a breath of fresh air. I had such a good time watching it.
Sally, played by Sandra Bullock, and Jillian, played by Nicole Kidman, are Owens women and come from a long line of witches. But due to a family curse, are doomed. If they fall in love, the object of their affection will ultimately die.
Wait, I hope they're going out for cigarettes instead.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Damn it, get out of my head. Get out of my head, Corinne. Which happened to their parents, which is what brought them to live with their magical spinster aunts when they were just girls. As they come of age, Sally is reluctant to find that special someone, while Jillian tries to find all the special someones she can. The aunts intervene with Sally. They cast a love spell which causes her to fall for a local man, but it backfires when she truly loves him and he kicks the bucket, comma, bites the big one, comma, or goes to get cigarettes and never returns.
Nice.
Jillian, who's across the country, has her own problems. She's fallen for a dark and brooding man called Jimmy Angel Love. And let's face it, no man with that name can be any good.
No.
She spirals into danger and needs her sister's help. Together, they need to fight for love and their lives as the natural and supernatural worlds collide and hopefully can be brought to balance with a little practical magic.
Aw, nice. Bringing it back around. I love it.
I always try. Doesn't always work. And sometimes it's clunky, but thank you. Corinne.
Yes.
Are you ready to get practical with some magic?
Why, I practically am. Absolutely.
That would be magical.
It's the era of the Scarlet Letter, and a woman, Maria, stands on the gallows platform, noose around her neck. The town doesn't like her, maybe because she slept with a bunch of their husbands, but really because they can see she has power. Much to the shock of the villagers gathered to see her demise, Maria steps off the gallows on her own, and the rope breaks. The town scatters, terrified, and instead of killing her, they banish her to an island. She's pregnant with her lover's child and waits for him to rescue her, but he doesn't. So, with her broken heart, she casts a spell on herself to never feel the agony of love. But as her bitterness grew, that spell turned into a curse.
Read, 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 read.
On any man that an Owens woman ever loved. Maria is an ancestor of Sally and Jillian, and their Aunt Frances is the one telling them about Maria and her fate. An 11-year-old Sally asks, "Is that why Daddy died? From the curse?" And we flash back to a 5 and 6-year-old Jillian and Sally playing happily on the beach with their mom and dad. Dad is having a great time tossing the kids around, but Mom looks concerned because she keeps on hearing the death beetle all day, which sounds kind of like a cicada. Don't know how to pronounce it. One of those two things. That sound means the man you love is doomed to die. Their father dies. And shortly thereafter, their mom died of a broken heart. So the girls go to live with their aunts, Jet and Frances.
Lots of pomp and circumstance around that grin. Their father dies. Yeah. said he was going to die, and then he just died.
Look, there was the little crickety sounds, and then, you know, and then the death. Yes.
And then we're not dwelling on it, though.
Inevitable.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. Gone.
Look.
Dead.
There was no scene where there was, like, rain and umbrellas in a cemetery. None of that. He just disappeared, as did the mom. Anywho.
Oh, yeah. I know. I think I put that in the outline. What the fuck happened to the mom?
I know. Well, it says that she died of a broken heart. And then later, one of them says, "Did you forgive Mom?" And I'm like, she must have died by suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I would feel terrible if I felt like I was responsible for the person who I loved dying. That would suck.
Yeah.
So, Dad died it. Mom died it. They didn't go out for cigarettes. Died it instead. So, Jillian and Sally's life with their aunts are pretty good, except for their classmates who relentlessly taunt them. Witch, you're a bitch! They chant as they throw rocks at them. And I'm just going to pause for a moment, because serious business. The aunts are fantastic, and Aunt Frances is played by Stockard Channing, and Aunt Jet is played by Diane Weist? One of those names, or something similar. But you know who I'm talking about. Or if you don't, you could look her up on under IMDb. Both of them are like super badass ladies. So
she was the mom in Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, so good.
The aunts have dealt with the town's wrath for years and try to console the girls. They're seated outside around the table, littered with goblets, cats, and fruit. Aunt Jet looks at Sally seriously and says, "The only curse in this family is your aunt sitting right there at the end of that table." Frances scoffs. The curse is real. She knows for a fact because of her poor Ethan.
Ooh.
They bicker back and forth. Accident, curse, accident, curse. The girls ask if their mother died of a broken heart, and the aunts confirm that she did. Aunt Jet suggests they go inside and do some magic. Sally has homework, but she's going to learn more in the house than she ever will in school. Inside, the girls sit on furniture, don white angel wings, and eat chocolate while attempting to light candles with their breath. Sally's a natural and casts the spell easily. Jillian, not so much. But the aunts assure her that her talents will emerge eventually. The lesson is interrupted by a knock on the back door. The aunts already know somebody needs a spell. They direct the girls to keep practicing, go to the back, and find a desperate-looking woman clawing at the glass. She wants a love spell. She's a mistress, and the man she loves needs to leave his wife. They get the spell book and the bird, and the woman pierces the bird in the heart, reciting her wish that he want her so much he can't stand it. Aunt Jet advises her to be careful what you wish for. Jillian and Sarah watch. They snuck in and were spying. Sally's appalled at the ceremony, buries her face in her sister's lap, and says, "I never want to fall in love. I never want to fall in love." Jillian, on the other hand, looks on wide-eyed and gasps, "I can't wait to fall in love." And little Sally's remedy to never falling in love is to cast a spell. That night, she goes into the aunt's greenhouse, gets her journal, and writes down all the things that she will require. The man she's going to fall in love with can flip pancakes in the air. He can ride a pony backwards. He'll hear my call a mile away, whistle my favorite song, and be marvelously kind. And his favorite shape will be a star. He'll have one blue eye and one green. As she lists these things aloud, she plucks a petal from various flowers. Jillian watches from the doorway and asks, "If you don't want to fall in love, why are you casting a love spell?" "That's the point," Sally tells her. "The guy I'm describing doesn't exist, and if he doesn't exist, I'll never fall in love and never die of a broken heart. Sound logic." So Jillian joins her on the top floor of the house, where she holds out all of her petal offerings, and they float out into the night towards the non-existent person Sally has called on. Mm-hmm. Years later... What are you singing?
"I'll never fall in love again." I'll never fall this in was, love again.
This movie was also one of my 90s favorite soundtracks. Like, I loved the Clueless soundtrack, and I loved this soundtrack because it had, like, a couple of Stevie Nicks originals, and it had that Faith Hill, This Kiss song.
And it's so funny because the Stevie Nicks songs, when I heard them, I was like, oh my God, Stevie, I'm not a Stevie Nicks fan. And yeah, I am. And I was like, ooh. And they aren't even like standards. They're something new. I don't, why? Why do they do this to me?
I love that witchy woman. One of the songs, though, I agreeably was kind of off from the vibe of the movie. So they play it in the credits because they're probably like, where the fuck do we stick this shit? Like, it doesn't go with anything that we're doing here. Oh, the credits. There we go.
You know, it's so weird because I swear when I saw this movie way back in the day, there was a scene where they showed what happened with that woman and her man. Like, they saw them out in town and things were just like all messed up. And it was like, oh, he won't leave me alone. And, you know, and it was just, but obviously I...
You know what? That sounds kind of familiar now that I think of it. Like, he was obsessed with her and she was like, what the hell did I wish for type of thing. And they're like, well, yeah, bitch, we told you not to.
Yeah. And so I was expecting to see that scene and I was like, oh, it's not there. Okay. Maybe I...
You in danger, girl. You in danger.
Seriously.
I guess she's not. Oh, she lived happily ever after. That's what I'm going to tell myself in my head.
The aunties were like, take it down a notch. Take it down a notch. You don't want to do this in the first place, but if you're going to do it, take it down. Okay. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah,
there she went. Let's just reel it back a couple of chapters. Yeah. He's going to appreciate me, respect me, leave his wife, give me fellatio at least once a week. What else?
Do all the dishes and the cooking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Like, don't ever get us together to do a spell. I have a couple of pages here for things I need this guy to be like. Nothing serious. Nothing too complicated. Years later, we see Jillian and Sally all grown up. Jillian is schlepping her belongings over a balcony towards a handsome man below while Sally looks on worried. I feel like I'm never going to see you again. Do you love this guy enough to marry him? Jillian laughs. What's enough? I hate it here. I just need to get out of this town. And me and you are going to grow old together and be in a huge house with a bunch of cats and probably die on the same day. Sally asks promise, to which Jillian promptly gets her bow to toss up a pocket knife. She slices her hand in Sally's and presses them together, a blood oath. But sadly, life is not the same in the small town without Jillian. It's just Sally and the aunts as they stroll through downtown. Jet greets everyone warmly and they all turn away to ignore her or shun them. And in this scene, they're coming out of the post office. And in my synopsis, I was going to say, like, these freaking ladies stayed on this island of their ancestors where everybody shuns and hates them. So I was going to be like, I wonder what that island's called, because they never overtly say it. I was going to say it's Witch Hater Island, USA. But as they're coming out of the post office, it says that the township is called Maria's Island.
Oh.
So they live on Maria's Island.
That's almost as good of a name as Witch Hater Island.
I mean, Witch Hater Island is kind of more fitting because everybody hates them.
It's got a little ring to it.
Yeah, explains that big, beautiful house that they're in that's got all that property around them right on the ocean front because we were here first, bitch.
That beautiful white Victorian. Ugh, so gorge. So gorge.
I mean, was Maria a good carpenter? Like, did she do that with her pregnant belly? That's really, I mean, she was a witch, but damn, do witches have skills like that? And where can I meet one?
She wasn't around during the Victorian style era of building. So I would say that it was her ancestors who did it. No, not ancestors. I don't know what they're called when they're in the future, but from the past. I don't know. Anyways, yes. People that came along later.
She could have been ahead of her time. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. She was very progressive. Mm-hmm.
She was.
Yeah.
She was a hoe before a hoe was popular. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
Hey, I just, like, I point a finger at all those married men's. It wasn't her. I'm like, come on.
I know, right?
Mm-mm-mm.
I want to see some of them peckerwoods on the chopping block.
Yeah.
And the Owens women received a letter from Jillian. She tells them she's in Orlando and the Roto-Rooter guy's history. Sally's appalled. I can't believe how quick she's going through guys. Aunt Frances muses, maybe someday she'll find a man who goes through her. As they make their way home, their magic shows. Leaves fall in their wake. A horse stops dead in its tracks. Let me say that a different way, because the horse doesn't die. It just stops in the middle of the road and lets them pass.
The horse went out for cigarettes.
The horse doesn't die. The horse is fine. The horse just stops and lets them pass. And Sally muses that she wishes she was normal. Normal, Aunt Frances pshaws. It's nothing to aspire to be normal. It's unimaginative. Just then, a handsome stranger crosses their path, and he and Sally give each other a long, lingering look. It's not lost on Aunt Jet. She notices this and smiles to herself. What is she thinking? Well, that afternoon, while Sally's in the garden, the answer up to something. Okay, I guess.
Sure. Did you throw some more magnetic poetry down on the...
I guess. I'm going to let it lie. You know what? Some banner writing there. Some time has passed, and the ants are sitting on the porch looking at the horizon expectantly. How much longer? Jet asks. Oh, any minute now, Frances answers. A bell rings in the distance from the town clock tower. Sally is taken over by something. She stands almost as if somebody called her name. In the distance, she sniffs the air and then inexplicably walks towards town. In the middle of the street, there is that handsome stranger making his way towards her, and they, without words, race towards each other and fucking kiss in the middle of the street, and it's a good one.
Yes, it's a very good one. I was like, passions, hello. Ooh.
I know. I was kind of worried about Sandra Bullock after we did 2 weeks' notice because her kisses with Hugh Grant were like,
no.
Not great?
They made some of the Hallmark kisses look like they were having sex in comparison to the Hugh Grant ones. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. So I was like, maybe Sandra Bullock is just not a good on-screen kisser. And then I saw this movie and I was like, okay, no. Oh, fucking, yeah, she is.
The ants are up to something. They sit on the porch and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I got it. Three years later, she's writing to Jillian. Her and Michael, the handsome stranger, are married and have two little girls. No one is chanting and throwing rocks anymore. Everything is beautifully normal. Jillian writes back that she's got a million friends. She's somewhere sunny and poolside, but she confesses, I don't care about any of them. The only thing I care about is Jimmy Angel Love. A greasy, dark, brooding guy who has... a darkness about him and most definitely smells like cigarettes and probably soured beer. Stands.
Wasn't he wearing leather by the pool?
Staring at her.
Wearing leather by the pool. How hot. No, that's just... If you see a man wearing leather anywhere near a pool, just run the other way.
Unless they're a bear and it's like, you know, strategic harnesses or something like that, you know.
I'm guessing, but even then. Yeah. Choose your materials wisely.
Mm-hmm. However, Sally's bliss gets fucked when she hears the death beetle one night. The next day, she tears up the floorboards, trying to find it, but is unsuccessful. And while she's tearing up the house, trying to kill the beetle and save her husband, her hubs, while walking through downtown and crossing the street, is suddenly surrounded by a ton of cyclists in a race. They whiz by, and he breathes a sigh of relief as the last one passes, only to be hit by a large truck. It is not a mystery how he died. He did not go out for cigarettes. He was smushed. That evening...
I have a question. Yes. You think that the cyclist would have actually killed him or just injured him? I know there was a bunch of them, but I don't think he would have died if he got hit by all of those cyclists.
No, I think that there would have been a lot of very unhappy injured people for sure. Yes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the one time you got hurt on a bicycle and it was not pretty. And I couldn't play with you for weeks, it seemed. So sad. So sad.
I don't remember that. How did I get hurt on the bicycle?
You were riding on, I think, Brian's bike. Like, he had you on it. And I think the bike fell and you got, like, caught up in the spokes or something like that.
No wonder. I cleared it from my memory. That sounds awful.
Yeah. And you were like, out. I could not see you. It was sad days in Corinthown. Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised I didn't just like plow through that, because I vividly recall one time that I must have said this before in a previous episode. I had a really bad stomach bug one day and I was like puking in the toilet and I was like maybe 6 or 7. And then I was kind of laying down and out of it because it like passed whatever I had eaten. It just, you know, started to settle down, but still did not feel good. You came to the door and do you want to go play with Corinne? And I'm like, yeah. And I like went outside. And then I was like, even as a kid, marveling of, I felt shitty like 10 minutes ago and now I'm fine. Which also, like, thanks, Mom, if I did have a stomach bug, just go ahead and give it to all the neighbor kids. Mm-hmm. Go on ahead out there.
Well, you know, I was a Christian Scientist, and as I explained to you as a kid, I didn't believe in germs, so it wasn't possible for me to get what you were getting. Ta-da!
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You were a super kid. I forgot. That must be like you got your Christian Scientist all over me and cured me. That's what it was.
You know, I'm just that good. If only they'd let me see you after that bike accident.
I will heal you. I will heal you.
You will be healed in the name of Jesus. Oh. That evening, Sally rushes to her aunt's house in tears. It was the curse. He died because I love him so much. The aunts apologize. We're sorry. We were just trying to give you a little push. We didn't think you'd fall in love with him. Sally is beside herself. What? How could you? She grabs a spell book and frantically searches through it. You brought him into my life. Now bring him back. But the aunts refuse. If they bring him back, it will be dark and not Michael. Please, please, she begs. But the aunts hold firm. And this is what I explained to a friend who offered to bring my sister back from the dead. And I said, that's not a good idea. I've seen the monkey paw stories. I've seen practical magic. It's better to just leave her dieted. And move on.
I'm sorry, what? somebody offered to bring Bridget back?
Kayla was like, is there anything I can do? And I was like, I would say to bring her back from the dead, but I know how that turns out. And she was like, well, that dashes that idea. Next we see Sally and her girls moving into the aunt's house. But this time, she swears, they'll be raised normal and neither of her girls will ever do magic. Aunties, never, ever do magic. Hello. But at least for a while anyways, the aunts can do whatever they please because Sally is in bed and basically not leaving. She tells her oldest daughter, Kylie, who tries getting her out of bed, I love you so much, but I'm just so tired right now. At one point, as she's in bed alone, she looks at her hand and the scar that she and Jillian made. Across the country, Jillian is looking at her scar and knows that Sally needs her. She drives for 3 days to get to her sister and wakes her up by poking her face. They spend hours talking about their lives and relationships. I know, we were like, that's such a sister thing to do. And I was like, my sister would never do anything like that. But I have a feeling that Denise would be like, Tara, Tara, Tara. Poke, 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 poke,
poke, poke, poke, poke, poke, poke, poke, poke.
Oh. How Sally was in the process of opening up a botanical store with her hubs before he died, and how Jillian needs to drug her boyfriend with belladonna to get some sleep. As a matter of fact, that's what she did to get away to visit Sally. That speaks to a healthy relationship, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. No.
No?
They're like on two different spectrums. They're like, my husband died. We loved each other. We had two beautiful kids and laughed all the time. I have to drug mine to get some sleep.
Our love is so intense.
You're great.
No. That's
no,
toxic.
That's no. Possessive, unhealthy.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah. Jillian and Sally are in bed together, chatting conspiratorially under the covers, and Jillian whispers, you've got to start getting up and living, if nothing else, for the kids. Get up, take a shower, and brush your teeth, because your breath stinks. That sounds like something Denise would say as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she has no qualms about telling me stuff that's wrong with me. And I'm like, I could have gone my whole life without knowing that I have unusually long earlobes. Thank you.
You do not have unusually long earlobes.
I know, she never said that, but I couldn't think of anything offhand. I just know that she's sometimes like, you know what? And I'm just like kind of brace myself like, what?
She's like, when you're at this angle, I can really see your nose hairs. You're like, Thanks, Denise. Yeah. Thanks. So, Jillian accuses Sally of having stinky breath, but she says it with a note of mischief. Sally whacks her good-naturedly with a pillow, and they go to sleep. The next day, Jillian is gone, and Sally wakes up with a new disposition, and her funk is over? She has a new resolve to finish the botanical store and get on with her life, but things haven't changed that much. Sally's kids are still getting harassed for being witches, this time out front of Sally's apothecary. Sally goes outside to break up the chanting crowd of kids who are saying, "Witch, witch, she's a bitch!" While the mother of the ringleader looks on, declaring to Sally, "Your kids started it."
Yeah, my kids are calling your kids bitches.
Right? I'm like, there's two of them, and there's a mob of children and some grown-ass adults who aren't doing anything, and they're saying that the girls started it. Uh-huh. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Real mature people.
Yeah. Kylie is done. She points her finger towards the bully, who is a boy who's standing in front of that gem of a mom. And she says, "I wish that you get chicken pox." And the crowd gasps and disperses while Sally speaks to her sternly, "You do not meddle with other people's lives. It's not right." Kylie says, "You probably can't even do anything anymore. You don't even use your powers." Kylie and her sister Antonia walk away, and Antonia, who's younger, wearing mouse ears and tail, whispers to Kylie, "I think you hurt Mom's feelings."
Antonia, that's what her name was. Gosh darn it.
Oh, yeah, I had to look it up.
I was trying to figure that out.
IMDb, and it was, and there's not even a picture next to her. But yes, it's Antonia.
God bless.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing God's work, Corinne.
Thank you.
Finding the names and healing the children.
I have a calling, and it's a blessed one.
That night, Sally's daughters go home and pepper their aunts with questions. How could Grandma leave Sally and Jillian when they were just little girls? Are we doomed to fall in love? Why doesn't Mom do magic anymore? Sally comes home, and here's the tail end of the questions. She asks what they're all doing, and Jet, who is obviously frosting a cupcake, says, "Making toast." Suddenly, two pieces of bread pop up from the toaster. Sally tells her girls to check all the windows. There's a storm a-comin'. And when they're gone, she warns the aunts, "I don't want you feeding my girls' heads with nonsense." Jet assures her that they won't. Not nonsense. And of course, it's not nonsense if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Sally writes Jillian a letter, telling her how lonely she is and how there's a hole in her that burns from being so empty. That she only wants a love that is so true that time will stand still for it. Totally not a huge ask.
No.
Totally not.
No.
Completely within, like, the reason. There's also a circle around the moon, which means there's trouble not far behind. The second Sally puts the letter in the mailbox to send, the second she does, the phone rings. She races back inside the house, knowing full well it's Jillian. She answers and is right. Jillian is crying, panicked, and asks if she can come get her. Sally races through the house, directing the aunts to watch the girls. She's taking the first flight out. The aunts are accommodating. Of course they'll watch the girls. They'll take them to the solstice festival. Sally argues, no, can't you just stay here? The aunts cannot. They're on the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Sally reluctantly agrees, but tells them she does not want the girls dancing naked in the moonlight. Aunt Jet chuckles and tells her that, oh, no, honey, clothing's optional, as you well remember. So I'm wondering if Sally was a little bit of a prude as a kid and didn't want to get naked. Sally goes straight to a seedy hotel in the middle of nowhere. She gets the key to the Jillian's room, opens the door, and finds her sister huddled and scared in the corner. They gather Jillian's things and leave. Jillian explains, Jimmy and I have been driving for 2 weeks and have just been zigzagging across the country for no reason. Then this morning, he wanted a donut, so we go to a donut shop and he asks for a jelly donut with cream. And I tell him, Jimmy, jelly's donuts don't have cream, not thinking of anything of it. I laugh, the kid behind the counter laughs, and then he socks me. Hard, fucker. As they're getting in the car, Jillian realizes there's blood on the moon and starts fumbling for her tiger's eye. She needs it for protection. She can't find it, so she goes to Jimmy's car where it's hanging on the rearview mirror. She grabs it, and then somebody from the back seat grabs her.
Hmm.
Sally comes over to try to hurry her sister along, only to find that she's being held at gunpoint by the crazy donut man, Jimmy. He directs her to drive, and she does. They aimlessly go down dark city streets while Jimmy drinks tequila and waxes poetic about the writer Louis L'Amour.
Oh.
He offers Sally the bottle if she'd like a drink, and she declines, probably because she's driving. But anyways, Jimmy loves Louis L'Amour because he was a foreigner just like him who loved all things cowboy and wrote about cattle wrestlers that would try to steal cows and take the brand off, but they wouldn't be able to, so they'd get caught. And as he's explaining this, he is holding his silver skull ring over a flame. Jillian nervously and telepathically tells Sally, because they have such a strong bond, that there's belladonna in her purse. You know, the stuff she puts in his drink so she can get some sleep. Winky, winky. Uh-huh. Just as Jimmy grabs Jillian's leg and attempts to put his own goddamn motherfucking brand on her. This incenses Sally, who tries to smack his hand away, and while doing so, swerves a car out of the lane and almost sideswipes a couple of others. She calls him an asshat because Louis L'Amour was from North Dakota and not a foreigner. And give me that fucking bottle before I plow you into a wall. Jimmy hands her the bottle of tequila, thinking she just wants to calm her nerves, when in actuality she wants to poison him. She pours the belladonna in the bottle and they continue on with their night. Next, we see them at a construction site. Nobody else is around. Jimmy is peeing, singing, "You're always on my mind," swirling the keys around his fingers so nobody could leave. Jillian and Sally are confused because he should have passed the fuck out by now, but he's still awake. He gets back in the car with a weird look in his eyes. Is it the belladonna? Nope. It's murder. He pounces on Jillian and begins choking her. Sally jumps in the back seat and starts trying to pry him off, but the scuffle is short-lived because he passes out mid-strangulation. Jillian picks him up off of her and his eyes are open. Shit! They gave him too much belladonna, and instead of knocking him out, they killed him. The girls contemplate their next move, and the most obvious choice is the death spell the aunts have back at home.
I really don't think that's the most obvious choice.
You know, to each their own.
Uh-huh.
Like, that might not be right for you,
uh-huh,
but in the moment in time, the death spells is the right thing for them to do.
Okay. I just think it's a bad idea.
Okay. Well, you know how this movie ends. So, I mean, if you did know how the movie ended, I might give it a spin. Because Sally warns Jillian that the aunts told her whatever they try to bring back will be dark and unnatural. And Jillian says that Jimmy was already dark and unnatural. So, you know, like, how much worse could he be?
I'm guessing he also did a lot of meth. That's what I'm guessing as well.
Yeah, driving back and forth zigzaggy-like for no particular reason sounds a little methy. But at the end of the movie, when they have that kind of reveal from the investigator guy, I was also contemplating whether or not he was zigzagging to try to find a place to kill her and hide her body.
Sure. I'm just talking about he stays up for days and days and days on end, and she has to, like, drug him to get some sleep.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like meth, and I'm like, murder, meth, murder, meth, murder.
How about meth and murder? Ooh.
Methurder.
Methurder. I was always wondering what the technical term was. Thanks, Tam. Thanks.
It was no problem.
Once Sally and Jillian get back to the aunt's house, they drag Jimmy's body into the kitchen and lay him out on the table, preparing the spell. Sally thinks this is a terrible idea.
Okay, well, obviously, you're the Sally in this relationship, and I'm the Jillian, and I'm just going to come to terms with that. It's fine.
You know, I think you're right. You are by far more free-spirited than I am. Let's see here. And Sally thinks it's a terrible idea, but Jillian insists, like Tamara, they need to. As Jillian cuts his shirt to expose his chest for the spell, I hearken back to all of the monkey paw stories that I read and just know this is no good. This is a bad idea. Obviously, Tam, you did not read enough monkey paw stories.
Okay, we all know how this ends, so of course I'm on the side of the wrong. Let's just reiterate that four more times, Corinne. I don't think you've driven the point home enough.
Anywho, she whispers to Jimmy, "When you come back, I am definitely breaking up with you." Which makes me think that she still wants to have a relationship with him.
Yeah.
I know.
Ew.
Yeah. They conduct the spell, which includes lighting sage, drawing a white star on his chest with Ready Whip. Sally tastes it. Yep, it's good. And then they chant, "Black as night, erase death from our sight, white as light, mighty Hecate, make it right." They chant and chant and chant, and it works. Jimmy comes back to life, springing up and choking Jillian, yelling at her, "I want you to be my wife!" Sally grabs a cast iron pan and whacks him several times on the head, and the sisters end up burying him in the garden. Thank goodness the aunts...
Wait, so he wanted her to be his wife. Uh-huh. Does that mean he wanted her to join him in death, or was he a necrophiliac?
Maybe a little column A and a little column B. Let's add a column C in there for a little spice and say that he was a conflicted soul who didn't really know what he wanted.
It depended on the concoction of meth and tequila in his system as to what he was feeling that day.
You know, Jimmy he didn't know how to love, and he needed someone to teach him how. And then he would have been okay.
I want to know what love is.
I want you.
Want you to show me.
No one can show Jimmy how to love because Jimmy, while it says he's an angel love, that is not correct. He is no angel love.
Probably not even his real goddamn name.
Thank goodness the aunts and kids are out of town because they certainly wouldn't sleep through something like that. The sisters agree that they won't mention it to the aunts. The next day, everyone comes home, and Jillian is nervous about meeting Sally's daughters, but they know who she is immediately. Jillian also has a heartfelt reunion with the aunts, who both notice the bruises she has on the side of her face, but are supportive and nurturing. As they go to have a breakfast of brownies, Kylie looks out the window. She sees something right where they buried Jimmy Angel Love. But nobody else sees it, including the viewers. I paused the video and couldn't see anything out of the ordinary.
Me too. Could not.
I was like, what is she looking at? All I see is a pretty pergola. Okay. The next day, Sally takes Jillian to her botanical shop, and Jillian is testing all the products, which seems to irk Sally. But you know what should really be irking her? She's fucking smoking in her beautiful store. Fucking Jillian when she, I think that she sneaks up into Sally's room when she like visits her that one time. Like, I don't think the aunts and the kids saw her. I think she just snuck up into Sally's room and like had like a sister slumber party and then left. But she's smoking in the room then. And I'm like, you get out of here with your cigarettes. Like, if you want to smoke, that's fine. Just take a little step outside. Go out onto the balcony. Just not in the room.
Yeah, they have a balcony, for God's sakes. Balcony.
Not in the room. And then she's in her fucking place of business, her beautiful apothecary full of natural light and all these beautiful bottles. And what is Jillian fucking doing? Oh, let me chain smoke in here. That seems like a great idea.
No, it doesn't.
You can tell it was 1998 because...
Oh, for fuck's sake, yes.
That would not be happening.
Yeah, like the brooding guy by the pool that's all sweaty, smoking a cigarette and drinking a bottle of tequila straight from the bottle. Oh, he's hot. Nowadays, you're like, oh, he's smelly. Yeah. He's smelly as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, he smells like sour alcohol and like he's steeped in cigarettes. Mmm, that's hot.
Yummy. Sign me up.
But Sally being irked at Jillian is short-lived because Sally has to head out to the PTA meeting. Jillian asks the other two employees, what's the deal? And they divulge, it's phone tree day. The most popular parents get to make the important calls and sound the alarm for the other moms during emergencies, etc. But Sally never gets picked.
I'm sorry, I'm not a parent, but that's not a responsibility I would ever want. I'd be like, I'm on the bottom of the list. Everyone's going to tell me what happens. Great. I'll have my phone handy and ready.
True. But if you were looking for acceptance among your snooty peers... maybe you would care about it.
I can go out for maybe some mimosas and brunch instead of like, let me call you and let you know when there's an emergency.
I think the point is that the women who go out for mimosas and brunch are on the phone tree and the women who aren't are not, you know. They get to have the fun time.
Got it.
Yeah.
Right.
Instead.
Well, bitch, I got your number too. You don't just got my number. I got your number. Maybe I'll reach out and just happen by the brunch place you all are at and just sit my ass down.
Mm-hmm. That's a Jillian move. That's not a Sally move. But I like the way you think.
I don't know. Sally got a little witch in her.
And Jillian's not afraid of channeling hers. Jillian sees fit to remedy the situation. She goes to the school where all the moms are seated in their PTA meeting. There is a gossipy murmur when Jillian gets there. Ooh, look at her tattoos, etc. Jillian plays it off. Yes, ladies, I'm back, here to steal your husbands. And she thrusts her hips and sits next to Sally. Sally is mortified. The only thing missing from this moment is me being naked in front of the room. The lady, who is clothed at the front of the room, continues to announce who is second in the phone tree line. And then, the moment they've all been waiting for, the person who has that coveted number one spot on the phone tree. I'm so excited and proud to announce that the number one person on the tree is... She flips through the phone tree after phone tree, and they all have Sally's name at the very top. The woman resigns herself and says, Sally. The rest of the women in the room are stunned, and Jillian slow claps. Woo! Congratulations! Isn't this great? And Sally isn't mad about it. Meanwhile, at the aunt's house, there is a creepy, crawly vine that's growing quickly over Jimmy's final question mark resting place. Ruh-roh.
I mean, yes, creepy. Creepy crawly vine. Not good, because we know it's down there. But I mean, if I could get something to grow that fast just by putting a dead body under it, I might be tempted.
Oh! Note to self, stay away from Tamara when she's gardening. Check.
Not you. Oh. There's just some people I think the world could do without. Oh. You're not one of them.
Thank you. The aunties know the proper way to celebrate your family being all together, and it's midnight margaritas. Jillian wakes up Sally. Wakey, wakey, midnight margaritas. They jubilantly run
to... poke her in the face again?
I think so.
She's poking in the face. That's every morning that we're in New York, Corinne. I'm just going to creep into your room and poke you in the face. I'm sure you're going to love it. I'd be like, all the practical magic. Get out of my room.
Seeing as how I typically get up before you, who's going to be doing the poking now?
Oh, okay. Challenge accepted. You, yeah, some can't. I pee a lot now. I pee a lot.
Congratulations. Oh. Note to self, bring the drugs for urinary tract infections to help out Tam.
No, I don't mean like that.
The sisters jubilantly run downstairs like two kids on Christmas morning, and the four women dance around singing, you put the lime in the coconut and mix it all around. Eventually, the party shifts to the four of them sitting around the table, taking shots of tequila and talking shit. The insults are a little more spirited, is a nice way of putting it, this evening. And nasty words just are flying out of their mouth, like frigid old hag, slut, and shrew, causing them to be simultaneously tickled and appalled. Then a silence falls over the table, and the aunts begin singing, maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have. Maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel oh, second best. Yes, you did. Girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. They were doing it drunkenly. Jillian and Sally silently talk with their eyes, panic filling them. Jillian rotates the bottle, showing the label to Sally. It's fucking Jimmy's brand. Sally grabs the bottle and asks the aunts, where did this bottle come from? Where did this bottle come from? The aunts drunkenly sing. Someone left it on the porch. Someone left it on the porch. Jillian grabs the bottle and smashes it in the sink. The aunts demand an explanation. But all Sally will say is that there was a problem and they handled it. The aunts know there's more, but neither Jillian or Sally is talking. The broom falls with a smack onto the floor, causing Sally to yelp and leap up. The ants eye each other. Sure, you handled it. We're going to go. And they head up the stairs. But what the sisters don't realize is they are leaving to teach them a lesson. But before they go, they grab a piece of Maria's hanging rope and tie some around Sally's kids' necks, making them promise to not take it off under any circumstances. And where Jimmy is buried has a much larger grouping of creepy, actively growing vines, which delight Tamara to no end, and toads jumping from it. Not a good sign. Not a good sign at all.
The next morning, Jillian and Sally have hangovers. They try to numb the pain with cigarettes, coffee, and forage for aspirins. Sally asks Kylie for the 9th time, will you please go get mint from the garden before you go to school? But she refuses because there's a man outside.
Ooh.
Both sisters rush to the window but see nothing. They do, however, notice the slip of rope around the girls' necks. The girls inform them that the ants gave it to them for protection. Protection from what? One of the other daughters relays. Oh, and there is also a message. Clean up your own mess.
Antonia.
Jillian. Yeah. Antonia says, because I didn't know what the fuck her name was. Child B said.
It's always the youngest that gets, like, no name.
Yeah.
Marsha.
The Kylie girl has done other things.
Yes. Evan Rachel
Wood. That's like, yeah, because she, yes. I was like, oh, I recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
Jillian promptly goes outside and attacks the rose bush that I've grown over Jimmy's body. I put that in my notes. I'm obviously really fond of this bush and I'm already taking ownership of it that I've grown.
You are so into gardening that I didn't even know it.
I'm not into gardening. It's because I kill everything. So if I'm like, I try watering, I try sunning, I try everything, I follow the directions, and the stupid thing is most of the plants that I get, when they start deteriorating, which happens all the time, they say, if your plant looks like this, it's either because you're overwatering or you're underwatering. Which fucking one is it? Which one? You can't, like, figure out which one it is if you just, damn it! So, yeah, that's why I'm just, like, absolutely enamored with this gardening pro tip that if you just put a dead body underneath the soil that you'll fucking get glorious rose bushes. The rose bush that began growing over Jimmy's body, yelling at it to stop and leave us alone. But she stops because she notices two toes of boots, the tips of his boots. But she stops because she notices the tips of his boots sticking up through the mud. Ooh. Is he raising? As quickly as they appear, they disappear, and Sally directs her sister to go back inside. Then she attacks the rose bushes, with pruning shears and not her hands. As she's hacking away, a stranger in a suit and briefcase approaches her and comments, "It's a little early for roses, isn't it?" He introduces himself as Gary Hallett, a special investigator from Arizona. He was kind of hoping to talk to her sister Jillian. She might have some information on a case he's working on. Sally does a great job of masking her nerves and goes inside to grab her, but before she walks through the door, asks, "How did you know I was Jillian's sister?" Gary's kneeling on the ground sniffing roses and just smiles and says, "Lucky guess." She realizes the proximity of him to the dead body and invites him inside. "Come inside! Quick, come inside! Get inside the house!" Once they're in, Sally beelines it up the stairs to warn her sister, and she is freaking the fuck out. For some reason, Sally doesn't think she can lie to this guy, and Jillian assures her that she can. Their story is, he hit me, you came and got me, we left and haven't seen him since. Before Sally goes back downstairs, Jillian asks if Hallett is handsome, and she nods and kind of giggles and says, in a penal code sort of way. She goes back downstairs to entertain the investigator and asks him what brought him to the island. He pulls out the letter she wrote to Jillian the night she left to go rescue her. And she's appalled. "You read my letter? That was personal." He agrees it was, but it was also evidence. Just then, Jillian makes her way downstairs in a slinky dress and a full face of makeup and overtly flirts with the investigator as he questions her. She relays their agreed upon story and adds, "A man only hits me once, then he never does it again." The investigator has their mark. Jillian is the more wily one, so he turns his attention back to Sally for further questions. He asks her, "Whose car is that in the front?" And she admits, "It's Jimmy's." We had to steal it to get Jillian out of there. And then she fumbles through a rambling explanation without trying to divulge too much information. She got kidnapped, but only a little kidnapped and not serious. But then they had to steal the car and she would really love to give it back to him. And she really has the worst taste in men.
Yeah.
The investigator asks if he could take a look around the house and Sally lets him. And once he's out of earshot or eye shot. This is my favorite part of the movie. I always have like a favorite part of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Once the investigator's out of eye shot, Jillian turns towards Sally and mouths, "What is wrong with you?" And Sally just turns to her, nonchalantly looks at her and says, "I don't know." Of course, without the sound, because you can't see me doing that, but they totally like mouth those words and you can see exactly what they're saying. I was like, they do that so well and I love it so much. Eventually, the three are seated around the dining room table again, and he has a book open. He's not only investigating the disappearance of Jimmy, he's also investigating the disappearance of Phoebe Stone. A few years ago, she was found strangled by the side of the road and had a type of brand burned in her skin from a skull ring, coincidentally enough. He asks for any help they can give. They slowly realize that Jillian was a short ways away from being murdered by this jackass. The investigator leaves with Jimmy's car, but before he leaves, he swipes some suspicious dust from the front seat and puts it in an evidence bag and leaves. Dun, dun, dun.
Next, investigator Gary goes into town to question the residents about the Owens sisters. Everybody has a far-fetched urban legend story about the Owens women. They have placenta bar at the botanical store. They fly off the roof on Halloween. They can hex you. And no man can survive their love. Gary winds up at Sally's botanical store interviewing her employee, who assures him that Sally's a good witch and not into that nasty stuff like disembowelment and human sacrifice.
Good.
Nothing makes you feel safe like having her on your side. Look, she's not into decapitating people. Don't even think about it. It's like on this one dating app, they have these question prompts, and one of them is like things you would never do, and so many of the guys are like, beat up a woman, and I'm all, okay, now I just think you're going to beat me up. Like, who says
this? That's the first thing that came to mind.
Yes, things you would never do. Beat up a woman. Great. I feel very safe now. I know you're saying you're not doing it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that came to mind. Yeah. Why?
Yes, exactly. Sally enters the store with her coffee, and just as soon as she gets behind the counter, Dwight, a disgruntled customer, comes in. You know, I could have gone to a legit doctor, but instead I went to you. The more of this I put on my head, the less it works. Sally restrains herself from rolling her eyes, takes a breath, and says evenly, that's because it doesn't go on your head. The customer blusters, if it doesn't go on my head, for fuck's sake, where does it go? Sally replies, for fuck's sake is right. Try and remember why you bought it in the first place. She stares at him meaningfully, drops her eyes below his waistline, and looks back up. He suddenly realizes, never mind, I'm good, and hustles out of there. Investigator Gary watches the scene, chuckling a bit to himself, and buys some shampoo, remarking to himself as he leaves, strange place. I've never spent so much on shampoo before in my life. He leaves, but is followed by Sally, who asks if she's under some sort of inquisition, and if he has something to ask, do it directly. He looks at her. You know, I already asked you what I wanted to know, and there's some parts missing from your story. However, I've got some stuff to take care of in town. How about I drop by your place tomorrow morning? Sally says, fine. And he responds, all right, it's a date, and walks off. That night, Jillian has a bad feeling and goes out to the garden and tells Jimmy, or the ghost of him, to stay away. The next morning, Jillian and Sally's daughters are in the greenhouse concocting a potion. It's a tonic to send the investigator away, and the daughters want to know why they can't tell their mom that they're making it. Jillian says it's for their mom's protection. Shh, secrets. During the concocting, Kylie finds her mom's journal, which has the true love spell she cast years ago when she was a little girl. Kylie asks, was this from my dad? Jillian, who is looking hungover as fuck and is wearing sunglasses inside, lies.
The quintessential 90s teeny tiny sunglasses that barely cover the pupils of your eyes.
Oh my God. Those sunglasses were a moment in time. I saw those and I was like, oh. Visions of Bram Stoker's Dracula just like popped into my head. I don't know. It was a lot. And I was kind of wondering, I was like, is Jimmy sort of possessing her now, trying to get her to kill the investigator?
No. No, maybe.
Just because of the whole wearing sunglasses inside bullshit. I was like, seriously, lady? When you were hungover the night, the time before or whatever, after margarita night, you weren't like rocking those sunglasses.
Maybe she couldn't find them.
I hate it when that happens when I'm hungover and I can't stand alive, but I can't find my sunglasses.
You don't drink, Corinne.
Yeah, but if I did, I would hate it if that happened, okay?
Details.
Jeez. And I do drink. Look, I've got a big glass of water right here.
You rebel.
Or is it vodka? Huh?
It is not vodka.
Jeez, she says that so derisively. Yikes. Fine. Maybe it's not. I wish that I could be like the cool kids.
Also, if you were drinking any kind of alcohol, it would be in a frou-frou cup with an umbrella and some fruit hanging out the top. Not a straight big-ass glass of chilled vodka.
You know me too well. I want mermaids on the side of my drink or it will not be consumed. So Kylie asks if the love spell that Sally wrote was for her dad. Jillian lies and says, yeah, it was for him. But Kylie calls her on it. Daddy had brown eyes. Jillian comes clean. Your mom made this when she was about your age. She created an impossible man so she wouldn't fall in love. Kylie responds, I can't wait to fall in love. Jillian recognizes a kindred spirit and tells her that love is wonderful. But if you don't keep yourself grounded, you can lose your way and fall. Kylie looks earnestly at Jillian. I won't let you fall, Aunt Jillian. And their moment is interrupted by the doorbell ringing. Investigator Gary has arrived. And Sally's youngest daughter, Antonia, enthusiastically invites him in for pancakes. However, before they settle down to breakfast, Gary and Sally spend some time talking in their greenhouse. He and Sally do a lot of eye-fucking while he questions her about being a witch and everything the townsfolk said about her. Does she do magic? She admits she makes concoctions for soaps, lotions, and shampoos, and her aunts like meddling in people's love lives. But that's about the extent of it. She asks to see his badge and holds the large silver star up to him, explaining how this star is a talisman and has power because he believes in it, much like her magic. The star itself doesn't stop bad guys. They're doing some serious eye-fucking during this exchange, and I don't need a dry kiss after this because I already feel like I had sex from their super hot eye contact. He blatantly asks if she's hiding Jimmy. She says, not in this house. Then he says, well, did you and your sister kill him? Sally admits it. Yeah, a couple of times. They go back out to the kitchen and breakfast is almost ready. However, Antonia is trying to do it herself and has made a mess of things. Sally frets over this a bit and Gary talks to Antonia. Have you seen a saguaro cactus before? She admits no. He playfully demands, step aside, and creates a saguaro pancake, which he flips in the air. Antonia is impressed and rushes into the room where Kylie and Jillian are making the potion, whispering excitedly to Kylie, he knows how to flip pancakes. The girls rush out and they head out to the yard to have breakfast outside. As Gary is serving them pancakes, Kylie asks, can you ride a horse backwards? Gary puts pancakes onto her plate. Yep, backwards, sideways, forwards, you name it. Antonia looks at his badge and the girls whisper, "A star!" to each other. Jillian, very unsubtly, offers her the special syrup. "You should try it," to Gary. I was like, wow, super cash there. She like kind of holds it, keeps on holding it, waves it in front of his face.
"Do you want some of this delicious syrup? I made it special just for you."
But the girls grab it. "No," they say as they playfully run off and they throw the concoction into the ocean. Jillian is pissed and Sally is confused and bemused. "Guess they didn't want to eat that," she says with a chuckle. Just then, a frog that is on a pile of rocks in front of where Jillian, Sally, and Gary are standing and watching the girls makes quite a noise. The three of them look down at the frog as a ring pops out of its mouth. Jillian nervously says, "Oh, that's mine." But Gary grabs the ring and immediately recognizes it. "I don't know what you two are up to, but you better get a good lawyer." He's pissed and says over his shoulder as he walks off, "What was in that syrup?"
"Love. Nothing but love, Gary."
"It's delicious.
I made it special for you." After the investigator leaves, the sisters are at odds. They're nervous about what Hallett knows and begin turning on each other. Jillian drops a bowl of fruit and complains, "I haven't been myself lately and I just don't feel well," and yada, yada, yada. Sally's had enough. Jillian made her an accomplice to murder and she's sick of hearing her shit. "Me, me, me, me. It's always about you," she complains. Jillian retorts, "You've always been jealous of me because I've lived my life while you stayed in town and worked your ass off trying to be normal. But news flash, you're not normal and neither are your girls." This crosses the line and Sally demands that Jillian leave. You can insult her, but not her kids. After this exchange, Sally begins putting on a sweater while Jillian looks on nervously. She is going to the detective because ever since he set foot in her house, the only thing she's wanted to do is tell him the truth. She leaves in a huff. In a huff! While her sister watches but can't seem to follow because there is something deep in the pit of her stomach that is growing and writhing. She clutches her belly but rights herself. Oh, it just must have been fleeting, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Sally runs down Main Street and catches Hallett as he's entering his hotel room. She confesses, "That ring was Jimmy's. I know you already knew that, but I just wanted you to hear me say it." He advises her again to get a lawyer, but she refuses. She doesn't want a lawyer. She wants to confess her sins. All her sins. All of her deep, dark sins. Every last one of them. Even the nasty ones. To him. Okay, maybe that was a little exaggerated, but she does want to confess. He takes her into his room, which is littered with evidence, and grabs a tape recorder. Before he clicks it on, she sees her letter, the same one he produced at the aunt's house. Her letter. And it looks really worn.
Super worn.
She shows it to him. And
floppy.
Super. Like, holes worn in the paper worn.
Like, "Hey, I just put this in my wallet and just pick it up and read it and fold it back and put it back in there and pick it up and open it again and read it and fold it up and put it back in there again. Worn.
For the last 3 years, worn." Even though she didn't send it 3 years ago, worn.
It's super worn.
Yes. She shows it to him and asks, "How many times did you read this?" He looks a little ashamed and says, "A few," but adds, "It was evidence." He presses record and asks where Jimmy is. Sally says, "In the spirit world." The detective clarifies, "Dead?" But no. Sally corrects him. "He's a ghost, and I believe he's haunting us." He asks her if Jillian killed him, and Sally breathes, "Jillian didn't kill anyone." She goes back to the letter, though. What evidence could you have gotten from this? And what if I confess? How terrible would the world be without somebody like Jimmy Angel Love? He tells her it's not up to them to decide and clicks the recorder off. He reiterates that she should get a lawyer, but if she trusts him, he will do everything he can in his power to protect her. They eye fuck each other for a few beats before he goes in for a kiss, and then they are full on making out. Ooh. Against the wall. Ooh. Lips and arms. Ooh. Flailing everywhere. Sally stops herself. She can't do this. But then she kisses him again, and he tosses her on the bed. Is it going to happen? Are we going to have a bona fide full-on sex scene?
No.
No. Because she looks at his eyes and notices that one is blue and one is green. This seriously causes her to stop, and she leaves while he looks on, muttering, What's wrong with my eyes? I was born with them. The confused and, let's be honest, probably sexually frustrated Sally walks along the waterfront when she hears cries in the distance. Just like before, she knows somebody's in trouble, and it sounds like it's her girls and Jillian. She rushes home to find her daughters barreling down the stairs crying. She sends them away and continues up to find Jillian writhing in her bed upstairs, seemingly possessed, half her body levitating off the bed. Suddenly, Hallett is behind her with this gun drawn. What the fuck? Was there like some editing thing? Because he's in the hotel. She leaves. I can't do that. She's off in the distance by herself on the water. And then in her mind, she hears people are in trouble.
Yeah.
Not physically, but like mentally. She runs home, goes upstairs. Bada bing, bada boom. There's a motherfucker with a gun. How did he get there?
I have an answer for you.
Okay.
He is watching her when she's walking on the beach. And so when she starts running off, he's like, I sense danger. And so he follows her. I didn't make this up.
That's not creepy at all.
I didn't make this up. This is actually what happens. Although he doesn't actually literally say, I sense danger. I put that part in. But yeah, he's watching her on the beach and he sees her run off. So
how do you know that he watched her on the beach?
Because they show a shot of him watching her through the window and then they show her on the beach. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was just like hearing something in the distance too. Like, is that a voice I hear? Because like she said that he can hear my cries from a mile away or from a distance away or something. So I thought it was like alluding to that. I hear something. It must be Sally, my love. And go after her. Alrighty, so he's there because he watched her like a stalker ass. And you know that's not right. Investigator Hallett, you're a lawman. You should know better.
Well, you also shouldn't be sleeping with your prime suspect, so, you know.
Oh my god, Dads, don't even get me started. It's going to come up in the goddamn ratings and reviews at the end. How many dry kisses? Well, that's going to knock off quite a few because, well, we'll just wait.
Look, sexual tension is sexual tension, and sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do.
Now what?
Tamara's giving me Corinne. A look. Apparently,
don't abuse your
she hasn't
authority.
Been in those moments where there's been the eyes and the undeniable passions.
Undeniable passion is deniable.
Okay.
I don't care who you are.
Wow.
Anyways.
Well, congratulations to you and your self-control, Missy.
Oh, you don't even know.
Oh.
You don't even know.
Oh.
Anyways, back to the story.
Uh-huh.
House behind her, gun drawn. Now we all know how he got there.
Very curious as to what she's been holding from me. Jeez. Okay.
And just then he sees Jimmy Angel Love's spirit materialize out of Jillian's body. The investigator is stunned, especially when Jimmy acknowledges him directly. Officer Hallett, seeing you makes me homesick. They square off and circle each other while Sally goes to check on her sister. Hallie looks dumbfounded, so the spirit says playfully, what's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Before plunging his spirit arm into Hallett's chest. He screams, turns beet red, and his eyes bulge out of his head until Jimmy touches something in the investigator's jacket. It's his sheriff's star. Jimmy screams and pulls his hand away to reveal a vicious star-shaped gash in his hand. Or spirit hand, or whatever you want to call it. He's angry. It looks like he's going to attack Hallett again, but the investigator holds up the star like a talisman, which causes the spirit to disappear into the air, while Hallett lay on the floor, breathless, demanding answers. And he must have gone outside for fresh air, because that's where we next see him. In the backyard, Sally approaches and gushes that she'll confess to everything, while Hallett tries to piece together exactly what the fuck just happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was Jimmy, right? He's dead. Sally said that's his spirit, but she did kill the man. He's conflicted. He came to the island thinking he's going to get the bad guy, but this is something altogether. He has to uphold the law, but finally admits getting real, real, real close to Sally that he did read her letter 1,000 times. I'm sorry, I'll do that again without my lips on the microphone.
that he did read her letter 1,000 times and she's the reason he's there and it's fucking him up. Sally informs him that the reason he's there is because she sent for him. When she was a little girl, she cast a spell for a person who had the qualities that she didn't think existed, but they did, in him. While she's explaining this, we see the cutest little boy sitting backwards on a horse. Cutest little boy sitting backwards on a horse. One blue eye and one green, getting surrounded by the flower petals that she released ages ago. And she continues, if you stay, I wouldn't know if it's because of the spell, and you wouldn't know if it's because I don't want to go to jail. And the next part I call what the fuck line, because Hallett jokes that all relationships have problems, which haha, but then she tells Sally, I'm going to go do what I do and you go do what you're going to do and we see where we end up. He literally says that. I'm like, what the fuck kind of ending to the conversation is that? I'm going to go do what I do, you go do what you're doing, and then we'll see where we end up. And then he, of course, walks away, but before he leaves, his last parting words were, and I wished for you too, which causes Sally to lose her shit. I just didn't get that whole, I'm going to do what I do, and you go do what you're doing, and then we'll see where we end up. The hell?
He's trying to figure out how to, like, deal with the whole situation, being a law-abiding man and all.
Filled with passions. Okay. Passions. Undeniable passions. Although if Tamara were there, she would deny them because she's that good.
Oh, deny the shit out of those passions.
What was that?
That was my sounds of disgust.
Inside, Sally finds Jillian. She seems okay and she hugs her sister. But then Jillian licks her cheek and whispers in her ear, yee-haw. Sally pulls back from Jillian and Jillian looks at her. I'm feeling very into sisters right now. Sally's eyes widen and she pulls back and knocks Jillian out just as the aunties arrive. Oh, no. They say, seems like we didn't arrive just in the nick of time, as they look at Jillian knocked out on the floor. They take her to the living room, tie her to a chair, and the aunts chastise Sally. This is what happens when you dabble. You have to commit. Right now, Jimmy is just squatting in her like a toad. Sally is resigned. I get it. Just tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. The aunts say, well, you gotta fuck that investigator. Fuck him real hard.
Oh, okay. I guess I can do that shit. Where is he at again? Arizona?
The Airbnb down the street. The aunts say, well, we'll need a full coven. At least 9 women. Ideally 12. You have any friends? Sally is on it. At this point, she gives no fucks and really wants to save her sister. So she activates the phone tree and lets the ladies know she's a witch and needs some help. And, by the way, bring a broom. They prep the house for the banishment and slowly the moms show up and make concoctions based on the aunt's direction. Even Sarah, the mom of the boy cursed with chicken pox, who taunted Sally and Jillian when they were kids, shows up because, you know, I've always wanted to see inside your house ever since I was a little girl. Sally kind of grimace smiles at her, but nevertheless welcomes her. They all gather around Jillian, who is in bad shape, on the floor in the living room. She's possessed, and it's not pretty. It's true her head is not spinning around, and she is not projectile vomiting green stuff, but basically might as well.
Still looks really bad.
Yeah.
Still looks real, real bad.
Real, real bad.
Real, real bad.
Real bad. The ants direct them to have one heart and hold brooms at staff level. They all begin chanting and eventually seem to be taken over the power of their witch unity. The brooms creating a circle around Jillian. Jillian writhes in pain and Sally begs them to stop. Jillian / Jimmy tries to leave the circle but is thrown back by an invisible force. Sally lies on the other side of the circle next to her sister crying and begs her to stay with her. Jillian begs Sally, just let him take me. He wants me
only me. But Sally refuses. Remember, we're supposed to die together, and I assure you, today is not that day. Sally is inspired. Okay, I've got it. Get back in the circle. And she runs off and grabs a bottle of tequila, drawing back a broomstick. Hey, Jimmy, you want this? She waves the tequila in front of Jimmy slash Jillian's face. Jillian slash Jimmy grabs
for the bottle, and when they do, Sally grabs Jillian's hand, cuts it, and cuts her own, clasping them together, just as they held each other's hands so many times in the past for support, as well as creating the death pact. Sally declares, "My blood, your blood, our blood." And the ants say, "Maria's blood." Sally moves into the circle with her, and the coven closes the circle with the broomsticks as a light whooshes through the house. And Jimmy leaves Jillian, but hovers above them in a nasty cloud, falling onto the ground in a pile of dust. They sweep him outside and pour the concoction over his final resting place as a banishment seal. Job well done. Witches!
What do you think? What was in that big cauldron?
Something nasty, because Aunt Frances was stirring it, and one of the women comes over to it, and she's like, "Okay, now just stir it. The smell is real good for your pores." And the woman looked like she was going to vomit. So, you know, it's foul, foul, real foul.
Foul, foul, real, real foul, foul, foul. Days later, Sally is burning that dreaded rose bush. I don't know why. If Jimmy's been banished and he's off to the spirit world, why are you going to take it out on the bush? And she receives a packet from Arizona. It's from Gary Hallett. Inside is a ring and a formal letter saying, at the conclusion of his investigation, he deemed Jimmy Angel Love's death accidental. She smiles to herself while Jillian looks on. Sally picks up the envelope and shakes it. Her sister remarks, "I don't think he's in there."
And to be clear, the ring is Jimmy's school ring, not some kind of an engagement ring or something like that.
His school ring has a skull on it?
His ring has a skull on it. That's what he was brandishing into women's legs or whatever.
That's what his school ring is, though?
Skull. S-K-U-L-L.
Skull! Oh, God. School ring, like, you know, no. A senior ring that you get when you graduate. Like, what the fuck kind of school did he graduate from?
Skull. Yes.
Skull. Yeah. Our mascot is the Holy Terrors. Our mascot's the Death Eaters. Our mascot are the pirates, but with the skull and crossbones, not the cute ones with the hats and the eye patches. Anyways.
The ring the frog burped out of its mouth.
That would be kind of fucked up. "I find you innocent, and by the way, that ring in there is a proposal. So if you will take a look at it," and that's hot. Yes. As hot as their interactions were, their engagement is pretty goddamn cold, if that's how it happened.
It's destiny. Destiny.
Destiny. So he doesn't even bother asking. "Here's a ring. What do you think?" Hot. Sally asks her sister what she should do, and Jillian gives her a sly smile and answers, "What wouldn't I do for the right guy?" Later that evening, Sally releases another leaf into the sky and a spell which calls to Gary Hallett. Shortly thereafter, while the family's in the garden, he comes up the walk, and Sally meets him halfway, and they share another kiss, one without the threat of arrest hanging over it, and everyone looks on thrilled.
Aww.
Yes, you can fucking kiss in front of people. No kisses interrupt us here. Do it. Do it. That's Halloween. We hear Sally's voice, who wonders if love can go back into time to heal a curse, or perhaps it was her and Jillian's joined hands that did it. We see all of the Owens women dressed in traditional witch attire, complete with pointy hats and striped socks. The aunties, Jillian, Sally, and their girls all line up on the roof of their house while a crowd of townspeople look on. But this time they are not jeering, they're cheering for the ladies. Sally continues, "One thing I know for certain is always throw spilled salt over your shoulder, put rosemary by your garden gate, plant lavender for luck, and fall in love as often as you can." She looks out into the crowd, where Gary's waving at her lovingly before she and her fam don umbrellas, leap off the roof, and all die, 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 die.
No!
Just kidding.
Their bodies go thud, thud, thud onto the ground as the onlookers gasp in horror. Yes.
Some get embedded into the dirt. Ah, more rose bushes. No, but really. They all actually float gently to the grass and are enveloped by the town that has now fully embraced them. Sally shares one more kiss with Investigator Hallett, and it's the end. Corinne, yeah. How many dry kisses do you give Practical Magic?
Oh, I know I shouldn't because it is a whiter than white movie. But I give it 4 dry kisses. I can't help myself. Wow. I love it so much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's another soft spot movie for me. Serendipity was one. This movie's another. 4 dry kisses. It's just, it's sweet. I can't help myself. I love it. And it's got fucking Stalker Channing and Diane Weist and Sandra Bullock and what her name is?
Nicole Kidman.
Thank you. So good. And a young Evan Rachel Wood. Just delightful.
Very young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many dry kisses do you give this bad boy?
It's so sad because this used to be my go-to. Love, 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 love this movie. Me and Jenny used to watch it all the time. We were like, we're the Practical Magic sisters, aww, but not related.
Yes.
But somewhere along the way, like, I watched it a few years back and I was like, oh, Practical Magic, I used to love that movie. And then I watched it and I was like, it just doesn't have the same shine it did back then. And I still like it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 3.5 dry kisses, and it is losing that half a dry kiss, A, because of the diversity, but B, also because that whole investigator-Sally relationship is just kind of icky.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know what it is about that. Like, authority figures that kind of take advantage. And then I think they try to make it so that he's like, I'm trying to be really controlled and composed around you. And so for that, I don't feel like I get their passion unless they're on top of each other. And then I feel it a lot. But then I'm like, oh, hey, you're kissing. Oh, hey, you're like the eye fucking and all that. But it's like few and far between. It's like they shut it off and they shut it on. Then they shut it off and then they shut it on. And I felt like there was more chemistry between her and her first husband. And we don't even really hear him talk ever, which is kind of weird. I have a big problem with authority figures. And that just knocked it down a half a dry kiss. But I still enjoy it, but I did not enjoy it as much as I used to back in the 90s.
The po-po brings it down half a star. Got it. So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Twitches?
Yeah.
Twitches? Said without a question. Twitches!
With Tia and Tamara Mori of the Sister Sister. And of one of whom was in the Santa Stakeout with Mr. Paul Campbell in last year's Christmas movie. Very exciting. If Sister Sister was a witch situation, it would be the movie Twitches. And I'm very excited for us to be doing this movie. And Tam can't wait to see it for the first time. Yeah.
I have not seen it yet.
If you have anything you'd like to say about Practical Magic, Twitches, Tammy Beanbelt-tacular, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. Tamara's looking around like, who, me, what? Belt-tacular?
Belt-tacular, belt-tastic. God, it keeps coming. I'm just a belty kind of bitch.
You can reach out to us also via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you could find the time, we'd love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you listen to this podcast. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Mwah.
See you next time.
See you next time. And by the way, it's my birthday. Please rate us, review us. We haven't been rated and reviewed in a year and we'd love that as a birthday gift. Thank you. Love you.
Yeah, what she said.
Yeah. Bye.
Did you record that lovely little ditty you just did?
No, it did not.
Oh, you got to do it again. Alcoo-ee, bring out that inner diva again. Bring her out. Come on. Okay, fine.